This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. In Iraq, a ceasefire halts for the time being, 3 weeks of heavy fighting. President Bush expands the role of the CIA chief. Political ads bring consternation to both presidential campaigns. And the whiff of what might be a spy at the Pentagon. Dan Shore is on vacation. And let us mention he has a birthday on Tuesday. He'll be 39 again. So we're joined this week by David Tell, opinion editor of the Weekly Standard Magazine. Thanks very much for being with
morning,
us,
Mr. Scott.
Tell.
Good to be here.
Can I call you David?
You certainly can.
Okay. Let's turn to Iraq first. The Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani came back, scars in his heart from heart surgery in London, brokered a ceasefire that gave the cleric Muqtada al-Sadr and his militia amnesty from prosecution to end that standoff at the Imam Ali Shrine. Neither the Iraqi government, the application of force from the U.S. Marines had accomplished that, although perhaps they all played their role. What do you see this deal accomplishing and strengthening and retracting from who's strengthened the balance of power in Iraq now?
Well, the developments of the last 48 hours certainly give us additional insight into how difficult it is to answer the question you've just asked me. One basic problem, I think, is that for the past couple of weeks, Western reporters have been out of Najaf pretty much entirely since being ordered out by Prime Minister Alawi's office. And even now, when they're back in, as might be expected, the initial reports are kind of confusing, as you point out. Ostensibly, the deal requires disarmament of Sadr's Mahdi army, but the New York Times reports this morning that isn't happening. We're led to believe that Sadr's arrest, which had been sought by the U.S. military for some months now, has been put in abeyance, but Secretary Powell went on the radio yesterday and went out of his way to reiterate that that wasn't in fact the case. They've not withdrawn the arrest warrant. So in the confusion, I think people are going to say, they're going to say that this means what they would like it to mean, and I think there's plenty of evidence on both sides. Sistani has imposed his will on a man like Sadr. On the other hand, Sadr has reneged on these agreements before, and the government, which is meant to be propped up or its legitimacy enhanced by this deal, wasn't in fact involved in the negotiations at all.
Mm-hmm. Let me quickly move to the two reports on the Abu Ghraib, prison that were released this week. An army report found more instances of abuse, teenagers abused at the prison, ghost teenagers, detainees held there without the knowledge of international aid workers. A separate inquiry faults Lieutenant General Sanchez and Defense Secretary Rumsfeld for confusion that led to some of the chaos and, in a sense, lawlessness inside the prison. Help us read how this is going to be received, for example, in the Pentagon.
Well, I don't think they'll be happy about these conclusions, though they'll pretend otherwise. There have been call, Senator Kerry most prominently, for Rumsfeld's resignation, and there are now even some grumbling among Republican congressional figures that perhaps he ought to go. But look, it's almost the fall. It's a presidential election year. The playoff rosters are set. You know, the trading deadline has passed, and cabinet officials don't get replaced at this point. However, notwithstanding the fact that both reports go out of their way to say that Secretary Rumsfeld and his immediate aides aren't personally responsible for abuses and torture, both reports nevertheless paint a very convincing portrait of chaos on the ground in Iraq, which Secretary Rumsfeld either knew about and ignored or didn't know about. If this weren't a presidential election year, I think his job might in fact be really in trouble.
In Russia this week, two jetliners leaving Moscow crashed within minutes of each other, and explosive materials have been found in the wreckage that are consistent with the kind of explosive device that have been used in terrorist explosions. And the Russian government now seems to be identifying these losses that killed scores of people as terrorism, but they were reluctant to it
they
first. Help us understand some of their reluctance and now why they've overcome it.
Part of it is probably what we've known for quite some time, which is that the Russian government, its officials, have not yet fully absorbed the habits or self-discipline of transparency in official proceedings. Some of it, too, is any government's natural reluctance to concede what appears to be embarrassing news, in this case, some grievous security lapses at the airport from which both these airplanes took off. And further, now that mounting evidence seems to indicate that Chechen rebels, Islamic fundamentalist Chechen rebels, were involved. It's a problem for Russia with respect to its policy in Chechnya. There's a presidential election in Chechnya, I think, tomorrow even. An election made necessary by the assassination of the previous Russian-backed president. So any acknowledgement that a peaceful resolution is going to be made difficult by continued violence is something they'd be reluctant to concede.
Potentially huge story breaking here at home today. CBS News last night broke the story that the FBI is investigating a man who works in the Pentagon who's suspected of passing classified information to Israel. The word spy is used, although the Washington Post cautions today that the charges may not rise to the level, or sink to the level, however we would phrase that, of espionage. The Washington Post actually names a gentleman, which we will not, until it's independently confirmed. The Israeli government denies any involvement in spying on the U.S., and it must be said the name of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, has been drawn into it. They deny any role as well. What are, being careful again, what are some of the implications that this could have?
Well, I don't think it's going to fundamentally alter U.S. policy toward the Middle East, no matter who wins the presidential election, but this kind of thing is certainly going to complicate life for whoever is directing that policy in the future. The person involved, who shall remain nameless, is a desk-level analyst on Iran in the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense's office. And this is one of the offices that the conspiratorially inclined commonly cite in support of the suggestion that some sort of cabal of ideologues has hijacked foreign policy in the interest of Israel. So there'll be a lot of dark talk about this, I'm sure, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Let me follow up, if I could, a bit on this. It certainly can't be good news as the Republican convention opens that any kind of security lapse like this occurred in the Pentagon.
No, if it
occurred.
No, it can't. I suppose we should carefully point out that if the Post is correct this morning, this investigation has been going on for more than a year.
Mm-hmm. With the cooperation of the Pentagon.
And the incident in question must have occurred even before that. So it's not a current security lapse at issue, but you're right. Any news like this is bad news.
This week, President Bush and Senator McCain joined in a call for the Federal Elections Commission to regulate 527s. These are a loophole feature, I should say, of the tax code that permit people to raise money for issue-oriented advertising. That's why the Swift Boat veterans have been able to raise money. It must be that's why Move On and George Soros has been able to raise tens of millions of dollars to put on ads that are, to say the least, disadvantageous towards President Bush. Is there any chance the FEC is going to act in this campaign season?
Short answer is no. The FEC, months ago in June, decided, after considering the question in some detail, that they would not take additional regulatory action against these 527 groups on the not unreasonable grounds that the McCain-Feingold law did not authorize them to do so, and Supreme Court precedent wasn't clear they could constitutionally do it even if they were inclined. Just a couple weeks ago, they decided that they would go ahead and take modest steps, but they won't apply until January. And President Bush and Senator McCain are now talking about legal action, but they won't be able to take that legal action until 120 days after the FEC has considered a complaint, and 120 days from now is December, which this year, at least, God willing, by then the presidential election will be over.
At least we'll know the results.
We will.
David, I want to thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott. Good to be here.
David Tell, who is the opinion editor of the Weekly Standard, in this week for Dan Shore. And let me draw this out a little bit. Listening to us from wherever he is on vacation at an undisclosed location, perhaps with Vice President Cheney, we want to say happy birthday to Dan, who will be 39 again on August 31st. Thank you.